So hello and welcome to our special call for Just Elite members, returning members from last year. And this is a call, I don't know, we called it something like Get It Done Day. And my intent for this was for us to kind of catch up on where you are with the things that you intend to do with your health or have been wanting to do and put into place from the program and elsewhere, and where we can help you, how we can get you, help you. The thing is, the two of you are, like Angelica said earlier, star students who just do everything when we talk about it. So there may be, that may be a different slight focus here. So we're here, I'm here to support you in any way I can for if you have any new labs, if you're confused about any labs, if there's certain things that you're doing that you want, you know, a critique on or, you know, a way to improve it on, anything at all that I can help you with. And because there's just a small number, unless a few people who are not expected to drop in, we can give you as much attention as you need. And then we can leave early for the day and go enjoy a beautiful Sunday somewhere, whatever is going on. And Paul, I know you had some issues with, you know, test results with your husband. And if you want to chat about that, of course, I'm totally open to that, too, if that's something you want to, you know, have a discussion about him. I'm so totally here to support him as well, because he's your support, right? And you need, you both need each other on that journey. So, okay. So who would like to start and just give me a rundown on where you're at and what kind of support you would like to get today? Are there things that you've been trying to do and having a hard time putting into place? Are there things you've been thinking about doing, but just aren't sure where to start, or anything at all that comes up? So who would like to start? Yeah, you want to start? Okay, Sandra.
Well, I think one of my major challenges on sustaining change or whatever is that we are traveling so much. So every time, you know, I can do things while I'm here that you... And I can do some things while I'm traveling, but things get a little bit more, you know, loose. And because I'm so active, it's like I feel, oh, I can eat more now. So I eat more. And then coming back, I have to eat less.
Yeah.
Because I'm not moving as much.
Did you know?
But I did get a standing desk at work.
Oh, good.
So at least, although, you know, I'm kind of standing, not that moving that much, at least I'm not on my butt, you know, all day long, which is good.
Which is good, yeah. And, you know, the thing about standing, and I'm sitting right now just because I was doing some stuff earlier, but I'm going to push my chair away and stand again, is that, you're not moving, but you can be. Right? You can just even little movements side to side, back and forth, up and down. I have a hard time sitting still or standing still. Yeah. So whenever I'm standing, I'm like this, I'm like that. So, you know, keep that in mind and also keep what I call desk-er-sizes in mind. Like what kind of things can you be doing? Like if you're just reading something, right? Or if you're just, you know, listening to something or even typing, you know, it's hard to go up and down when you're typing, but to just see how you can do some movement. And
But I tend to get focused. And when I get really focused, I don't remember even to breathe, you know, when I'm very concentrated.
Right. The other thing I can think of for that too is I love sticky notes. And if I want to remind myself of something, you know, I get a sticky note and just write something on it and stick it on the screen so that it's there. And, you know, it's interesting because after a while you just don't see it, right?
Yeah.
So if you put it up there and it reminds you breathe, right? Then you take it down and you have another one you can put up that's a different color. You know, so there's a lot of, it's like little.
Actually, you told me that and I was doing it before I left, and I guess I totally forgot about it.
There you go.
Remind me.
But yeah, you can do it
again.
But the other thing that's so cool is having our cell phones, right? Because it's so easy to set timers in there. And if you can't do something right then when it goes off, you could just hit snooze or set alarms.
Yeah.
I don't know how many, but mine has at least 10 alarms that I could set. So if I were to set it for 10 a.m. and 11 a.m. and 12 a.m., you know, and then it goes off and I'm in the middle of something, I can't, instead of shutting it off and then not hearing it again for an hour, you can hit snooze. So there's little tricks like that. And once you get in the habit, it'll be better. Yeah. Ideally, you go to the bathroom, although if you're like me, you can hold it all day. And so you can just like, oh, I went to the bathroom in 8 hours. That's pretty bad, right? So you do that. And I don't know if your office has like a stairwell or anything like that.
No,
it's
but
not.
My house does. So
your house does.
I try
so when
to
you're at home,
every day.
Remind yourself to go up and down. Right? Yeah. That's what I do. And I keep a medicine ball at the top of the staircase. So if I go down, I'm carrying my medicine ball. So it gives a little extra. And then when I come back up, going down with a medicine ball isn't much exercise, but coming up with a medicine ball is certainly exercise. Yeah. So just there's all kinds of little stuff like that. And it does take persistence and habit, and don't expect yourself to have it all down within the first week.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. Yeah. Good. So, was there a particular question about the travel, like our ways that you can do it? And I'm just going to jot down notes because we'll go.
Well, many of the places we go are super remote. Mm. I mean, there's no connection. Sometimes we camp and, you know, for example, we were in Monument Valley. I had red dust on my ass, you know, it was just everywhere, just they had showers, that was good, but
yeah,
it was like, you know, some things are like, okay,
and that's where it if you are out in the middle of the nowhere, there's like maybe there's a 7-Eleven type store at the beginning of the campground or something. Not a lot that you can get, so that's where having a lot of powders and dried stuff is much
I travel with a chunk of stuff, and we could have a super great cooler.
Great.
So, you know, and I cook all the meals, many meals. I have a camping kitchen, so.
Yeah. I think you're probably doing really well. You're just a perfectionist, and you're like looking at being perfect at this, right? And it's really hard to be perfect when you're traveling. You're going to eat more dried food than you normally would, more stuff in packages than you normally would, just because you don't have all the fresh produce around.
And I'm a glutton, so.
Yeah, you like to eat. And I think part of it might be, it's vacation, so I'm just going to splurge a little. Yeah. And that's fine when it's a vacation, but you've been doing this on a regular basis, right? Yeah. So, and actually, he was a mentor of mine years ago in a health coaching program before anybody ever heard of it, how to be a health coach before anybody ever heard of it. And he had doctors and naturopaths and all this stuff. He was way ahead of his time. But he would teach this stuff, and then you'd watch him at dinner or lunch, and he would order stuff that, like, you know, a turkey sandwich on white bread, like, seriously? No. And his excuse was, well, you know, I'm traveling. But the reality was he traveled more than he was at home. So in reality, his major diet was restaurant food, you know, and I'd be sitting there eating my salad and taking my nuts out of my bag and throwing them on my salad or whatever. And he'd be eating the turkey sandwich on white bread and saying, so we can tend to rationalize with ourselves.
Oh, yeah.
To make it okay. You know, oh, yeah, I can eat from the jar of almond butter straight out with the spoon because I'm traveling and I walked 4 miles today or whatever. Yeah. But in reality, it's really just it's just the emotional eating demons that get control and say, oh, good, we have a good excuse for doing our thing. And I do it, too. Like if I'm busy, like the rule of not eating before bedtime, that's my hardest rule. Hardest one, because not most of the time, but when I'm really busy and I get off a call at 9 o'clock and I have like a couple of hours of emails to write or something to do. And it's like, oh, well, I can have the almond butter with the chocolate in it now because I get to, like, you had a dinner. You're not hungry. But why do you want almond butter with chocolate in it now? Yeah. Well, because it's satisfying that emotional need. What I really need is sleep or rest or fun or whatever. Mm-hmm. But we substitute food for when we're not making the rest and the sleep and the mindfulness and all that stuff. We substitute it. And we all, you know, maybe not all of us, but at least I do. I know you do too, Angelica. I know you have, you've mentioned that. And I know you, you know, so I don't know if Paula, if you, well, you've done it. Like when you found that wonderful, so delicious stuff, right? It's like, oh, it's just a special treat. It's just a special treat. And then it becomes like every day you're having your special treat, right? Or I make ice cream, and I made ice cream for friends that came over last night, and there was some left. So it was soppy and it was goopy. And I went, I'll just put the rest of this back in the ice cream maker so I don't have to wash it and figure out where to put it and make more ice cream, you know? And then when I finished that ice cream, it was like, oh, I really want more. So like, what's that about, right? It's all about, there's that emotional need or that need
for
rest or fun or companionship.
That calls you to have more and more and more.
And more. Some foods just do that to us, right? Because it triggers this. For me, ice cream is always a comfort food. For other people, maybe it's chips. I don't eat it all. I tell friends who brought over chips, they go, oh, you don't eat chips. They're organic and they're that. And I went, no, because chips are a trigger food. And I know it. I know that if I eat one, it'll be, well, there's only a little bit left in the bag. I'll finish the bag and then I'll just quit and I won't eat any tomorrow. So I don't go there. So a lot of times it's having not, because we don't have, if we don't have willpower, because I don't, it's having the discipline to not start.
Yeah.
Right. I think willpower is when you start and you can have a little bit and stop. And there's people I see like that. Oh yeah, I have three of those little crackers or two of those little or a little spoonful of this. Or I make a big batch of chocolate and put it in the freezer. And then I just have one a day. And for me, that's like, seriously, if I make those chocolates, if nobody else is around to eat them, the rationale is, oh, they have cordyceps and broccoli sprout powder in them. And they're really, really real food, not chocolate. And then I eat the whole thing, which is way more calories than I should be eating, right? And the timing of the day.
Yeah. Even so with all the good things that they have.
Mm-hmm. Right. And I'm not sure exactly what it takes to make that go away. I don't know that it does. I think that there's some addiction tendencies that we have to learn to protect, that we have to learn to have rituals in place and things in place that prevent us from getting onto our dark side.
Yeah.
That's just what I've observed, you know, even like Trisha Nelson, who teaches, and she's been doing this for how many years, and she went from the 50 pounds overweight, never gained another ounce. I watch her, how disciplined she is, but she's disciplined, right? She will go back to the room after a session at a conference, and she will spend a half an hour to meditate. Even if everybody else is going straight to dinner, she'll say, I'm going to be a little late because I need to go meditate. Because if I don't, then when I go to dinner, my willpower is going to be shot and it's not going to be pretty. Right. So we all like learn what those little strategies are.
She found the way for her.
The ones that work for her. Exactly. And it may not work. Like to me, she does like a walking prayer thing every morning. And I'm like, that will work for me. Right. It's not going to work for me. But there's other things that do. And we have to just look at the pool and the repertoire of what are some of those options and then come up with what works for us.
Yeah. I find that things work for me for a time. And then something happens that makes me forget, and then I go into the room.
Then you go into, oh, no, I'm going to eat it good with the spoon. I'll just have a couple of spoonfuls, and the next thing you know, the jar is empty, right?
Yeah.
Okay. All right. So, did you say you had a lab? You have a lab that you want to do?
Yes. You suggested that I do the CBC and the vitamin D.
Okay.
Again?
Okay, good. I'll look at that. All right. Let's move on to Paula, then we'll come back and circle around at your lab. Okay. So, Paula.
One of the things I want to clarify, something that you said at the beginning about this being the get it done day. That's actually August 2nd. We have, so.
What is, so this is the lab day?
This is the lab day.
But whatever. Okay. There's only two of you. We can do whatever the heck we want.
I get that, but I just wanted to make sure.
Thank you.
There is another event scheduled on August 2nd that you called Get It Done Day.
Okay, so good.
Yeah.
Good. I'm glad. Thank you for clarifying me that for me. So maybe that nobody really had extra labs because they came to the previous lab. And yeah, okay, that may be why we have lower attendance today.
Yeah, hard to say, but anyway.
Who knows?
Yeah, well, I don't have any new labs. I mean, we went over all of my labs. My latest ones were the end of May. And I am waiting for a stool test to come. I'm going to be redoing a stool test. And unfortunately, my primary doctor, who back in May said she would order that for me, her nurse practitioner, who is actually the one who ordered it for me back in February and had the account with Genova, left the practice. And when I contacted my doctor a week or so ago, she said, I'm too busy with Mary gone. I can't do it. So I'm like, oh, gee, right? So I actually contacted Dr. Mensa, Dr. Bowman, because I know that they deal with stool tests. And they actually are doing ordering the GI map. So I contacted Steph, and she said, that's fine. I looked that up online, and it's very, very similar to the GI.
Very comprehensive test. I haven't had the opportunity to run them yet, so it'll be a good opportunity for us to explore. Yeah.
It has basically all the same information that GI Effects one does on it, which is important because we need to kind of compare, you know, we need to see some of the same things that were out of balance then and see how they are now.
Right.
So I'm waiting for that to come. That should come this week.
Oh, good. Okay, good. Send those usually, I would guess, take 10 to 14 days or maybe even 3 weeks.
To process, yeah.
Yeah, for them to process it. Because they're culturing multiple days. They're watching, you know, they're doing a lot.
Actually, I don't know that they actually, I'm not sure. Oh, if they culture.
It might be a PCR.
The PCR type.
Yes.
Yeah. Yes.
So they don't have to. So it might be quicker. It might be quicker.
Yeah, it says 7 to 10 days turnaround on their website. So we'll see. And I'm also getting the OAT redone as well so that we can see the, you know, the neurotransmitters and the bacteria.
You know, we get to see them together.
Exactly. Yeah.
See the, yeah.
Yeah. Cause that's what I did back in February. I did both of those two at the same time. Yeah.
Okay. Good.
Okay. So that's in the works. And I've also been, well, Steph and I, we've had a long conversation about this whole testosterone, high testosterone thing. And her thought on this is that my body is not actually producing all of this testosterone. She has two thoughts about it. One of them being that my estrogen is converting to testosterone, you know, that I'm going that way with that.
I don't know if that's backwards.
Well, she seems.
I mean, it normally doesn't go backwards. It normally just goes in one direction.
Yeah, I'm not normal. Right?
Yeah. You never know. I mean, what could do it? A bacterial, a dysbiosis, an endotoxin that could trigger that. But okay, so it's a possibility. And your husband's not using any kind of testosterone cream or anything.
No.
All right.
And the other, her other thought, and she wanted me to check this out with my primary doctor and I completely forgot, it is the possibility of something that's rare, a tumor on the adrenals, some kind of adrenal tumor that produces testosterone. Are you familiar
with that? It's very rare, yeah. Normally there are them that more produce cortisol or DHEA, but it's certainly possible. I'm just going to look that one up. Again, you know, it's one of those needles in the haystack type of things. You know, you and I were talking about that. It's your normal level of testosterone, but it isn't it isn't getting converted down. So you have the opposite of an aromatase excess. You have an aromatase deficiency, and that's where you and I were going with it.
Because
I think that the level wasn't so high that I would think that it was, because your estrogens were so low.
Right.
That it wasn't, and DHEA was low as well. that it wasn't being converted to DHEA or, cause that reaction can go backwards. But I'm just going to look real calm in women. I mean, the most common cause of excess testosterone in women is obviously PCOS, which is caused by insulin resistance. And your insulin resistance is like minuscule compared to what it used to be.
Right.
And testosterone wasn't high then. So I'm tending to think.
Well, 3 years ago, when my primary doctor checked my testosterone, and that was through blood, it was high. So that was 3 years ago when I was really at the start of this whole journey.
It would be curious to do it at blood again to see how that compares, because it's hard to compare, you know, your
own. Exactly. And Steph suggested that I do that as well. See if my doctor would order that. And right now I'm not sure she will. She's seems pretty stressed with her the way things
are. That's a typical, she just has to pull out a lab requisition and check.
I know.
But the other one, she would have to set up an account. So I could see where that would be more work. And you don't have the typical, like the symptoms, right? Growing a beard, right? Growing big muscles, hoarse voice. You don't have any of those things as a result of high testosterone.
Well, I have the hirsutism, yes.
You do?
Yes.
Mm-hmm. Okay.
Not full beard, but plenty. Mm-hmm. That started in my early 20s.
Okay, so it could be related to the insulin resistance. Tumors are found in 2 out of every 1,000,000 people are testosterone producing tumors.
Hmm.
So super rare. I mean, the way you would look at that would be to do an ultrasound to be able to see if there's some growth on the adrenal gland. But I would be curious to see how that level compares blood-wise to that, because I'm thinking that the previous, and I'll make a note of that and we'll get back to looking at your labs too. The previous Dutch test, it wasn't as high. Okay.
Yeah, I had a kidney ultrasound last summer. I have a cyst on my kidneys, and I got the report from that just to see if they had mentioned anything about renal.
Should have seen it, right?
And there was nothing mentioned other than the kidneys. So I don't know whether they would have caught something else or not, or whether you would have to do an ultrasound in a more specific place to.
Yeah, or
renals.
One with the, well, you wouldn't do it with them. Just looking to see what other adrenal gland tumor. Blood and urine tests. Measure the amount of adrenal hormones. It's just that one. Okay, testosterone. Rare, 2 out of every 1,000,000 people, most likely to be benign. Diagnosis, here we go. Blood testosterone and DHEA. Urine 17 ketosteroids. Localization. CAT scan or MRI. So maybe the ultrasound wouldn't show it. Maybe an MRI would be more what they would do. Yeah, so it may not show. I mean, given the adrenals are so small, and ultrasound isn't as, what's the word? Sensitive.
Sensitive, yeah.
Right. So it may actually need a, may actually need that. But the point isn't, you know, whenever you're undergoing different diagnostic treatment, a diagnostic, what are you going to do? So what are the possible outcomes and what can you do about it? So would we be looking at surgery to remove it? I mean, there's some, yeah, that's what I mean. It's like how, what's the risk of removing it versus the risk of having it?
Yeah, right.
So, I mean, it's good to know what it is and know to watch it, that it's not getting bigger, that it's not, you know, pressing on any other surrounding areas, which, you know, there's not a lot that's going to happen there in the adrenal. It's not like it was a thyroid and then you have to worry about, you know, compressing on breathing and that sort of stuff, right? So it, you know, I think let's just get the blood testosterone to see how it compares, to see if it's moving in the wrong direction. Like if it was a tumor, it generally, you would see those numbers getting bigger over time as opposed to shrinking and going down over time, especially given how much you've done with the insulin resistance piece.
Right.
Right. Yeah. So that's the kind of thing I would look at. But we'll look at your test. I want to see how it compared to the last test. I think it was a little higher than the last.
Yeah, a lot higher.
It was a lot higher. Okay. Yeah, than the last urine test. So I think it's worth getting that and then addressing that primary. You know, the primary would be a person to address it with to say, hey, you know, I've been reading about that this could be caused by an adrenal tumor. What can we do to diagnose that? Are you willing to do that? I mean, that's with it, certainly within her scope and training, you know, and her paradigm is, yeah, if it's a tumor, let's figure out what it is and where it is and get rid of it.
Yeah, when I had talked to my gynecologist on the phone about this high testosterone, and I don't know how much she believes in the Dutch test, you know.
Right.
She asked me some questions about things related to high testosterone, but she really wasn't concerned. She says, I don't think you ought to be concerned about it. So that was her perspective, and she didn't bring up, I mean, this was before I ever talked to Steph, so I didn't know anything about adrenal tumors possibly, you know, producing testosterone, so that wasn't something I could, yeah, could ask her about, but she just pretty much dismissed the whole thing.
Yeah.
Yeah,
you know, when in doubt and you don't understand something, let's just dismiss it. But it's how high is the testosterone and what are the downsides of it? Yes, facial hair, right? If you were in your childbearing years, apparently it didn't interfere with childbearing, right? It would interfere with, you know, the PCOS and menstrual periods and acne and, you know, all those sorts of stuff that it could interfere with if it was indeed PCOS. But at this point in your life, right? Is it seriously a problem? And I'm the stuff we talked about in terms of increasing the aromatase, you know, could be something that would be helpful because you've got low estrogens,
right?
Moving it down into the estrogen pathway.
Yeah. Well, I got on the estriol drops that you had recommended.
Good.
Yeah, I did add that.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. I think that, and again, like we said, I never want to do anything to help someone increase their estrogens, except for the estriol, because it's a safe one, if they have the imbalances with the 4-16 and 2-hydroxys, because it, at low levels, so what if you're, even if your 4 was 50%, it's such a tiny amount, it's not going to put you at risk. But if you start to increase it into more, you know, healthy physiologic doses or levels, then that percentage, that tendency to go to the 4 becomes a problem.
Mm-hmm.
You know? Yes. So, all right. See what you can do about that. If not, you can just go to Dr. Hopkins' lab and order a testosterone. I think it might be $50. Mm-hmm. I don't think it's all that much. And just see. And look back at your tests from a few years ago to see what kind of testosterone was measured. Was it free or was it total?
Right, yeah. Right. I'll have to see if I have that, if I can access that online.
Okay.
Yeah.
Yeah, because that'd be good to know, to be able to compare, like, which direction is it going, and right. if it's free versus not free. If you tend to have higher total, well, on the Dutch, it's more the free. It's more the active form. That's what they're measuring. So it's different than on the blood. You can have really high testosterone levels and testosterone symptoms of deficiency. And that could be caused by resistance, receptor resistance, but it can also be caused by the lack of conversion. So excess of the binding globulin that holds it bound and doesn't allow it to get free. So high levels and you're still low. It's kind of like if you had high levels of T4 and low levels of free T4. So say your T4 was 16, which is very high, and your free T4 was 0.8, which is low, you're going to have symptoms of thyroid deficiency even though your levels are high. And that's why when you don't do the full range of tests, you get weird ideas. And then it's like, oh, just give, you know, let's just reduce your, but it's not. It's really, why is it binding? And the thing about testosterone is it will cause, it's more likely to cause, in the terms of thyroid, it's more likely to cause thyroid excess symptoms because it causes less binding globulin, less of the thyroid binding globulin. Whereas estrogen elevation, somebody on high levels of birth control pills, will tend to have low thyroid symptoms because that causes more of the thyroid binding globulin, so it's less of the free. So I haven't seen any indications in your thyroid labs that that's the case, that the excess testosterone is causing fewer of those binding globulins, but it's complex, right? So we just want to really break it down and not ignore, and maybe ignore it or just do a wait and see and watch. If we feel like, okay, it's not causing any serious adverse symptoms, right? But the thing is, with a high testosterone like that, I would expect you to be like high sex drive and, you know, the things that I would expect like that, that you're, you know, I can't work out. Every time I work out, I get these big muscles growing. You know what I mean? So it doesn't seem to be active
right
in your system in that way, you know? Yeah.
Exactly. Yeah. That's what Steph pointed out too. Yeah. And then I want to be out there climbing mountains or something.
Yeah. Let's get up there. Gets to some rock climbing. It's going to be cool, but not, you know? So, but it is producing some of the facial hair type stuff. So.
Yeah. My OBGYN, what she said was, she says, is that getting worse? And I said, no. So that's, you know, she said, if things were getting worse and she said your voice was getting real deep, she said, then we would be concerned.
But, yeah. Yeah. So you don't really have any of the symptoms of excess testosterone, except that the estrogen is low.
Yeah.
And the suspicion is, well, why isn't all that testosterone being converted? Because it's a normal pathway. You have a lot of up here and you don't convert down. What's happening in that pathway, right? That aromatase pathway. And that would be the thing to be looking at. And I know we looked at it. We'll look at it again because it's not still fresh in my mind. Right. Every time I look at things, I get a different, deeper perspective sometimes. So we'll go from there.
Okay.
So we'll look at that. I'm going to pull up Sandra's labs and then we'll come back and pull up your labs too.
Yeah.
So Sandra, you put the link in there, you said, so I can just pull that.
Yeah. In the chat. And I also just added it to the doc.
Okay. So it's in her folder. Cause I don't see the link.
So the second link I sent you, that's the lab itself.
In my teamwork chat?
In your teamwork chat, yes.
Oh, okay. I was looking at the chat here.
Yeah.
Okay. Got it. All right. Yeah. All right. Angelica, here we go. So the second one was the lab and the first one was the drive, or vice versa?
The first link is the whole Google Doc for today's call, and the second link is Sandra's recent lab.
Okay, got it. Okay, so this is a new one, and you also have your, let me go back there. You said you put it in your master tracker, which is where it's much more, you know, it's easier for me to look at. I'm getting better and better with some of the ranges. All right. So Sandra Lab folder, here we go. Health tracker. This is what I want. Thank you for doing that. It makes it so much easier. All right. So we're going to look at lab. And okay, you do them. Good. You're a sophisticated spreadsheet user because you know how to do them. You know how to add a column at the beginning. Most people just add them to the end. So it's yours is like the most recent first, which I personally like, but I'm no way I'm going to try.
I do it like that because you like it.
Thank you. I appreciate that. It's okay if I share my screen?
Yeah, you can share.
Mm-hmm. Okay. All right. So we're looking at, let me put this over here, and we're looking at 6:10. So we had stuff on 6:40.
Actually, it's 7:10. I goofed.
Oh, it's 7:10. Let's go in here and change that. I'm like, wow, that was just 6 days later. You were quick. Okay, 7:10. Got it. All right. So the things we wanted to look at were
CBC and vitamin D.
Okay, so white blood cells look good. Red blood cells look good. Hemoglobin looks good. Last time it was low, so that's really looking good. Hematocrit looks good. Your MCV is actually a little higher. Have you been slacking on your B12 or folate supplementation?
No, I just started the folate now. I wasn't doing folate. You recommended the holistic health.
Holistic heal, yeah.
Folate. So, yeah, I just started taking it a couple of days ago.
Okay, so we'll look at that again. I would guess you should look at that again in a couple, 3 months, just to, because that's, the blood cells are, they last about 90 to 100 days. So if you make a change and you go in and try to see a change, you're not going to really see much of a change until the old ones are gone, which are going to be bigger, and then more of the new ones have replaced them. So I'd say, you know, 2 to 3 months is probably reasonable to redo that one. Let's see. Neutrophils, yeah, they're still on the high side. Lymphocytes are okay. And monocytes. So this indicates there's some sort of infection going on. There's some sort of bacterial infection going on.
Okay.
And the D93. Okay. So what dose of vitamin D are you taking now? So it appears to be the best level.
I'm taking 8,000.
8,000. Okay. So check that in the next time, like in 3 months, recheck that also and see if it's staying right there. Then you've reached your sweet spot on vitamin D supplementation. Yay. You may need more in the winter, right? But if at least for now, this is going to be a good dose.
Okay.
And we'll see how it goes. Is that all we did? Yeah. Platelets are back to normal. So that might have been a spurious change. It was just a little bit low. Yeah, go ahead.
Isabel suggested that I do a mold test, so I just order it.
Okay. A mold test being like for the environment. So perfect.
Yeah.
No, I think it's good, especially given, you know, you have a basement and you live in the Midwest. Basements tend to get moldy, you know, especially in the northern areas and in, you know, the moisture climates like that in Florida and all. So I think that's a good thing to do.
Yeah. And I had a landscape issue that the water was coming towards the house.
Oh. So
that we resolved it, but we had moisture in the basement.
Yeah, so you want to have somebody come in, and then if there's remediation that's required to be able to do some remediation, like it may be, I don't know if you have sheetrock down there or carpeting.
Yes, parts of it we have.
Partial. And the flooring is what?
It's concrete.
It's concrete.
But we had some efflorescence from the hydrostatic pressure that the water coming towards the house was creating.
Say that one again. You had some.
Yeah. So we have a lot that the garden is higher than the house.
Okay, got it.
So when the water comes down, it was creating hydrostatic pressure under the slab, so creating this moisture to go
through. Kind of pushed up the slab.
Yeah.
Yeah. I'm just wondering how much of that actually seeps into the room or if it's just wreaking havoc with your foundation, right? Mm-hmm. I mean, it's good that you don't have wood flooring and you don't have carpeting, right?
No.
Both of those would be like just reservoirs.
Yes.
Right, uh-huh. The kind of thing. And I know that they have some sort of, with concrete, they do have some sealant or protection stuff that you can put on that's an anti-mold kind of thing. And I think there's some natural, I don't know, because I've seen it when I've looked at some of the you know, like the summits and things like that they talk mm-hmm. about. So it might be something that you look into and have them go through and make sure they do the swabbing and the, you look at, windowsills, you probably have like high windowsills if you have any there, right?
Well, I only have a little window in that basement, but super tiny.
Yeah. And is it near where the depression in the property would come?
Well, that's on the side of the house, and that's also where I vent my kiln. So, no, that part, I think it's okay.
Okay. Yeah, because just because a windowsill would have wood, you know, some more porous materials, right?
Yeah.
So if it got, you want to make sure you check there. But also your walls, are the walls slab as well? So it's, yeah.
A portion of it is.
And a portion of it would be the sheetrock. So have really check the sheetrock carefully because sheetrock tends to, and then the insulation that's behind the sheetrock can be, you know, very much infected. And I know if there's carpeting, the carpeting may not look like it's bad, But the padding underneath can be brutal.
Yeah.
I remember that when we pulled up ours, it was horrible. It was horrific. We just took all the carpeting out. And then, you know, looking to see what might be going on. The neutrophils are on the high side. It's just a little high. So my main thing is the monocytes, right? They're chronically elevated, which is more of that chronic. So it may be from the gut issue here. You know, that the gut bacteria are out of balance. And we've seen that on some reports, right? So that's the piece. It may have gotten a little worse from, when did you travel? It was somewhere in this time period, right?
Yeah, I just did that. So.
It might've gotten slightly worse over that time period just because you weren't as clean with the diet. What are you doing now for the gut bacteria?
Well, regarding the biome test, that, you know, we said I was gonna kind of follow it. So I'm avoiding, well, you know, it said that I have a virus from the tomato, the peppers, garlic, and something else.
Yeah.
So I'm trying to avoid all those four things. And according to them, it looks like I shouldn't be eating any ferments at all right now.
Mm-hmm.
That things tend to be over fermenting in my gut.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. So you've been doing a lot of ferments, right? For a while, you weren't doing any because you were having a histamine reaction.
And then I started just doing the five-strain...
The five-strain lactate-free... Oh, the five-strain bifido. I think that would be something you could continue, but the ferments in the food where you're going to also get other strains, right? Well, you can't control what strains are going to grow in there, really. And there's some good stuff, right? And there's some stuff that nobody can populate and buy. But I think the bifido would be a good thing to maintain because you don't want to allow... If you allow your good bacteria to drop too much, then you're going to create a breeding ground for the undesirables. I'm going to pull up your thing again. I'm going to pull up your test. just to see about some of the pathogens. Okay, that would be here. Wait a minute. It's the Ultra Labs. I'm looking to get back to your folder. New lab folder. Okay, we should have it in here.
Is this complicated for you to find my stuff like that?
No, I get it. It should be in here.
Because I can start saving it in a different way.
No. You've got it very organized. It was just I didn't have the handy the. What's that?
What date is that test?
This one is. Let's see.
No, that's the old one.
Oh, that's the old one. Why?
You go to under newest tests.
Oh, under newest tests. Yeah, probably would be best to do them in. Yeah, I guess it's fine. Whatever. I mean, I can adapt. I'm adaptable.
Well, this is basically for your, what is easier for you to find things.
Yeah. Yeah. I didn't look at the newest test. I should have just seen that. That's makes it pretty easy. Let me open this in a new folder. All right. Biome. And this is where you superfood. Have you started to use more superfoods as banana? What does that do to your blood sugar?
Well, I don't know how much. I use this week to ease back into work on my activities, and I'm going to be more thorough starting Monday.
Okay. Okay, let me go back here and look at the, I don't remember which one I opened.
You order the recommendations.
Okay.
The recommendations.
Is that what this is? I want to see the bugs.
Oh, so you have to go to the other one.
Okay. Opening. Make sure this is the one I want. Inflammatory activities, okay. Yes, your diversity is very low.
Yeah. He's pathetic.
Yeah, very low. Meet your microbes. I'm still not crazy about this test. I don't find it as intuitive and easy to read as some of the others, you know, where they give you amounts, right? Where you can actually see this is a 4+, this is a 2+. And there's so many of these, it's like nobody really knows what, like, there's no way you're going to know what all these mean.
Well, and I'm not the type of person that will look every strain in the internet. So they suggested that I add the ox bile that I just added, and that I add that Iberogast.
Right, to help. Yeah. So have you started that? Are you going to?
Yeah. I started it.
Okay. Yeah.
They say to do it, the Iberogast, 2 to 3 times a day. I just to simplify, I do it when I'm home.
You do it when home. Is it a liquid? Is it a cap?
Yes, a liquid. You have to do 20 drops with your food.
With your food, okay. And, you know, sometimes... when it's hard to, you know, take stuff back and forth, if it's something that I feel like I'm going to do for a long time or somebody's going to do for a while. It's just get two and have one.
Yes, I do that with the bitters. I have a vial at work.
That way you don't have the, oops, I left it at work. Whoops, I left it at home kind of thing. But it may help to have that more frequently with the food, mm-hmm. just to make sure that it digests better.
Yeah. And actually, I don't have 3 meals a day. I have 2.
You have 2. So it's just one at work and one at home.
Yeah.
Yeah. And you have like a lunch, a late breakfast, early lunch kind of thing.
I have a lunch. Yeah, I'm doing intermittent fasting.
Intermittent fasting and skipping. And how do you feel with that? How do you feel when you get to?
Cool. Fine. Yeah, fine. Yeah. In the beginning, I was like, scared. Like,
I know. Right.
But yeah, it's okay.
Do you find that when you're doing that, that you have more of an appetite at dinner and more of a tendency to want to, this is only my second meal. I better fill up. That's the only concern I would have with that.
I think it has to do more with stress.
With the emotional.
If I'm calm and whatever.
Okay. So how much are you doing? Like I would see that a great transition for you from coming from work and going to home would be to map out like 15 minutes, 10 minutes even, to just do some meditation or heart math or tapping or breathing or something to make that transition small enough period of time that you could do it, even if you just start with 3 minutes and then move it to 5. Yeah. Because you'll see, that made a real big difference. Let me do it a little longer. How much longer can I do it? Can I do it again? Because it's that transition, stress. And you got good control of the food there because you don't have a refrigerator full. And you have whatever you brought. And you're going to have one meal. And then you're going to be busy the rest of the day. So there's that distraction. So something at home that you could make that transition. And, you know, even visualize or talk yourself or tap on, right, that I have control, you know, that I there's plenty of food and, you know, I have the support I need. But it's that self-nurturing that I think it is that, oh my God, it's such a busy day. It's such a busy day. I deserve a treat.
And then it's just the distraction of it because I find that I have a hard time being in the moment. So, you know, when you're not paying attention, you do a bunch of stupid stuff. You just do it.
Yeah.
Happen. Exactly. How did I get here?
What did I do? How did this get in my hand and mouth? Yeah. So I think that self-care moment when you get home, whatever it takes, right? Even if it's to walk around the block or jump up and down on the trampoline, you know, a combination of the movement and, you know, something that keeps you going. If, you know, you have stairs at home, you have stairs, you don't have stairs at work.
At home.
Going. The desk is going to help with that. But that way you satisfy a little bit of movement and a little bit of the stress piece without it being so time consuming. Sometimes it's like, oh my God, like this morning it was like, do I go out for a run or do I finish these emails that I need to finish before I get on this call, right? And it's always that I don't have time for that. But sometimes when we make the time for it, even if it's just a 10-minute whatever, then the clarity that you get after that makes you so much better and more efficient at what you end up doing. So it's really just a habit. It's like a muscle that we need to train.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. Does that help? So, you know, as far as these biome tests, I don't know if I have a mental block against them or what, but I look at them and I go, what am I supposed to do with this information? It's basically a test that someone gives me an interpretation for, and I don't really know how they're basing that interpretation. Yeah. So I have a hard time hanging my hat on that interpretation. Whereas if I get the GI effects or the GI map, which is similar, or the doctor's data, I look and I go, you've got 4+ bifido and or 2+ bifido and 4+ E. coli and lacto. We really need to focus on getting the bifido up. You've got Klebsiella at a, you know, higher level than you should. And we need to get that down. You know, it gives me like really actionable stuff. Whereas the bio is like this intellectual, oh, well, that's interesting. Now what? Right?
Well, I can do
what they say. Do what they say.
They do say, do what they say. But they now they are giving you a 40-day plan, and then after the 40 days, they change supposedly the recommendations.
Yeah.
Because you eliminated offending things from your diet, and maybe yeah. later you can reintroduce some.
Right. It's kind of like an elimination diet or whatever. Yeah. So I would say just follow what they say, except for if they're telling you that your superfood is banana and it causes your blood sugar to go up,
sure.
don't yeah. eat it, right? You know, so use your own judgment and your own knowledge about yourself. But what I'm saying from my perspective as a clinician, I like to do the dirty work and evaluate, not just mm-hmm. say, they told me to do this. But I like to know more of the underlying, like that whole list of 4 pages of that. It didn't tell me much of anything. To tell me how much of that stuff was there. Is it too much? Is it not enough? How do they balance with each other? Yeah. Right. And some of those organisms are things that are not known pathogens or known friendly flora. Right.
Yes.
So I would say I would recommend that you continue with your bifido because it's not fermented food, but that maybe during this period while you're testing out their recommendations to bring it in balance is that you don't do the ferments because they will have a lot of other organisms that may throw it off and just see how it goes. But don't like let it go to wasteland and not provide the bifidobacter because the bifidobacter.
So you're saying just add a scoop to a smoothie.
You can add a scoop to a smoothie, right?
But not make yogurt or nothing.
Yeah, exactly. Or just have it in some water because it works best to take a powdered probiotic, either fermenting it and letting it grow in a food or taking it in a little bit of water on an empty stomach. So first thing in the morning or between meals or last thing at night to give it time when your gut's going to be empty for a while to have time to make it down and, you know.
But don't they need food in order to grow?
They will get plenty of food. What happens is if they're implantable, you know, some of the organisms we take in are not natural flora and they don't implant and they're just there for balance. But if there's something that you want to implant, you want them to implant. And when there's a lot of food in there, they're not necessarily going to make their way to the lining and just kind of implant in the gut lining. They're going to be like part of that food. That's just my understanding and mm-hmm. a lot of research. I mean, there are differences of opinion, but most people say take them on an empty stomach. Some people, like Paul Bergner says, take them whenever. Don't like scrimp on them. Take them with food. Take them without food. Take them in the morning. Take them at night. Just take them whenever you can get yeah. them in. Right. But because we have too many rules around when we take stuff, it's easy to just not take it because, oh, well, it was too close to lunch or it was too close to dinner. Right. Yeah. So I would say do what works for you. But you can put it in a smoothie. You could put it in a little water and just take it separately.
Yeah. Yeah, I think I tried it once, a couple of times at night.
Mm-hmm.
I think I was a little restless.
I've heard that from some folks too. I have heard that, you know. So the natives are restless and now they're, you know, you've got this activity going on and these new organisms that are trying to. So don't take it at night. Try it in the morning. You know, try it because you're intermittent fasting. So you have this whole period of time in the morning before food gets in.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. And yeah. just give them some time to make their way.
Separated from all the supplements I take.
No, they can be with the supplements. I'm trying to separate them from this big bolus of food, right, where they get lost in the shuffle. With the supplements, you know, I don't think that's a problem. They don't have to be, like, isolated on their own. Make sense?
Okay. Yeah.
Yeah, and give that a try.
Great. I just ordered another stupid test. Well,
test what?
You know, I saw this. It's about food sensitivities. You send a few hairs. And supposedly they say what you're sensitive to.
It'd be curious to see. I know that there's not a lot of research on that kind of thing. And in a lot of the forums where I, you know, hang out with other practitioners, people are skeptical about it. But
yeah, but I have $9 or something. So I can compare.
You can compare. Yeah.
With
what it says. I find that if you start to get too many food sensitivity tests from different places, all you do is get yourself confused.
Yes.
Because there's different ways of measuring a hair. I don't even know what they're looking at in the hair, right? But I know that in when you do the blood, sometimes they look at your antibody levels, your IgE. Some of them look at IgE, IgG, and IgM. Some of them actually look at the lymphocytes and see what activity or inflammation might be caused in there. So, and some of them are, I don't remember what the ELISA, I think the ELISA might look at, they're looking at some other immune response. And
they
say
they don't do the IgE. After I bought it, it was a Groupon thing.
Well, IgE, I think, is kind of not necessary, because if you have an IgE reaction, you know it. You eat strawberries, you get hives. That's an IgE reaction, right? It's an immediate, and you don't really need to spend a lot of money to know, except if it's like an environmental thing and you're in this environment loaded with a lot of stuff. Yeah, that you want to know which things. But with the foods, usually, if you have an immediate hypersensitivity, it's very easy to isolate it. It's those delayed hypersensitivities that are really challenging, because you've eaten so many foods and then 3 days later you have a reaction. You're like, okay, what was it, right? Yeah. So those are helpful. And then there's IgG. The ones that I think are really valuable are when they do the IgA as well, because the IgA is mostly getting it from what's hanging out in the lining of your gut, ready to attack, right? And so they may not be in the bloodstream, right? So that's why I like stool testing, IgA stool testing for some of those, because it's like, okay, what's sitting there in waiting? And IgAs, I'm not sure what the blood IgAs are actually accurate or tell us much, because most of the IgAs are going to be sitting in the mucous membranes, in the nose, in the digestive tract, in the lungs, in the vagina, you know, any place where there's a mucous membrane, they'll be sitting there waiting. And I'm not sure how much of that actually would get into the blood. So I don't know if those are accurate, but I've done stool tests and those seem to be pretty accurate. They don't do a lot. Entero Labs does those. And usually with allergy testing, it's when we've been coming along, you're doing all these great things, and there's still something that seems to trigger. It's not all the time. It comes up. You're not sure what it is, and it's really hard to isolate. And that's where sometimes help having the antibody levels and knowing. So I'll be curious to see. Bring it on. Show it to me. And we'll look at it, and we'll figure it out if it's useful or not. They're not expensive, right? They're like $99 or something.
No, I paid like $48.
$48. So, yeah, it's like a... whatever.
Yeah.
Right. Right.
It was just kind of, you know, going to the casino and say, okay, I'm going to bet this
money. Right. It's an easy, you know, like, okay, I lost $48. So, okay. Yeah. Like, whereas it's not $480 and you're like, I'm going to really think carefully.
Right. Yeah. That's why I did it. So, okay. Yeah. What I meant.
Yeah.
It's not terrible.
Yeah.
The other thing that, I have two more things.
Yeah.
One is, Isabel also brought up again the maybe doing an oats test. I never done it.
Oh, you haven't done one before?
No.
Yeah, I think it could be helpful. Let me think timing wise though. If you're working on these gut bugs.
Yes.
And you're doing like following, I would say do it about 4 to 6 weeks after you've started in earnest. You're going to be home for the next 4 weeks.
Yes, but I'm living again on the 20s.
July
20th?
Oh, August. Okay. Okay, perfect. So do it in the beginning of, you've just started this, right? So, you know, send the test off sometime in early August, right? Say that you've been doing, following the Viome recommendations for a month. And then let's see. Because right now, if there's a lot of imbalance there, and we've got a lot of bugs producing a lot of endotoxins, it's like, okay, what else are we going to do? Do you know what I'm saying? So I think it would be good to see how well is the actual Viome procedure working in terms of the actual endotoxins that either bacteria, yeast, funguses are producing. Plus, in the oat test, we're looking at neurotransmitters, Krebs cycle, vitamin and minerals, antioxidant status, etc.
Okay.
So it could give us some specifics to go on. But I personally would wait probably till after you're doing this thing for at least 4 weeks.
All right.
And that would put it at the beginning of August. So you'll be able to do it, run it, send it in before, you know, before you leave.
All right.
Okay.
And the last question I have for you is, well, I probably know what you're going to say. But, well, recently I'm hearing a lot of stories about shingles.
Mm-hmm.
And I'm at that age, which
well, shingles can happen at any age.
Well, no, supposedly, if you have the virus, the older you get, you know.
It's also stress related. They will come out with stress will bring it out. So, too much sun will bring it out. Like a trauma, heavy metals. There's a lot of things that could bring it out. I don't know that there's particularly age. But what makes you think? Because shingles is pretty obvious, right? You're basically having this burning, itching, rashy kind of thing, usually on one side of the body and usually along some nerve distribution pathway. So it's like right along your rib cage, leading around to your back, something along those lines. Or, you know, if it's cranial, it would go into the face. So tell me what your what makes you think about.
Well, for example, one friend of my mother-in-law, she got it in her eyes.
Oh, yeah.
And she's right now in a, you know, assisted living. She cannot close her eyelid.
Mm-hmm.
And something happened with her leg. She cannot walk.
Mm.
Then another of my friends, they got the Shingrix vaccine right now. And that she was telling me stories about some friends that they had the horrible stories about, you know, getting a shingles attack
from the vaccine.
No, from not having the vaccine.
This is
from not having the vaccine, not from the vaccine.
This is big pharma propaganda, right? They're trying to get everybody to get every vaccine to prevent everything. So what happens? Why do we get shingles? We get shingles. One of the causes is low lysine, high arginine. Right. So,
and I have that.
And you have that. So really focusing on lysine, right? If you want a preventative, vitamin C, lysine, looking at your foods that you're taking in. Chocolate is high in arginine, unfortunately, right? So, some of the nuts, right? But seeds aren't as much. So looking up those pieces could be a preventative, but taking, if you're concerned, taking lysine, 500 milligrams three times a day or a couple of thousand a day, you know, it doesn't matter if you spread it out. It's better if you spread it out, but you don't have to. Vitamin C, keeping your vitamin C levels up, which I know you're already doing, but sometimes you go up and then you go down and up and down.
Yeah.
Really keeping those vitamin C levels where they need to be. So you're concerned that it might be, your eye thing might be shingles. Or are you concerned that you might be at risk?
I have all this inflammatory thing and, you know, I have this tendency of having a weak immune system.
Yeah.
That's basically what I'm thinking. But also, I read on the vaccine and you shouldn't have a vaccine if you have a low immune system.
Mm-hmm. Oh, yeah. I know. And, you know, the people that shouldn't be having vaccines are the ones that are given them, right? Older people whose immune systems might be depleted. Yeah, take a flu vaccine. And then, you know, you end up with Guillain-Barré or some crazy, you know, side effects of it. So I think that vaccines, there may be a place for vaccines. If you are going to the jungle in a yellow fever infested place and you're going to be there for a month, then maybe the vaccine would be a good idea.
Yeah.
But that's not your life, right? You live in a nice home. You work in a nice building. You travel. You get outside. You're taking care of yourself. You're not the high. I wouldn't say that. I can't think of any vaccines that would be helpful for anybody in that environment like you. So I would say if you're concerned about these things, it's immune system boosting, right? So we've talked about reishi and astragalus being really good immune tonics that you can do, not when you're in acute stage, but although reishi could be okay, but like just as part of an elixir, part of a smoothie, you know, regular ingestion, maybe not every day, just because your body gets used to stuff every day, alternating, but astragalus. I mean, you can get astragalus. They look like tongue depressants.
Yeah, I have some.
And you can just, so getting those kinds of things in on a regular basis, keeping your vitamin C in. Have you gotten quercetin? Do you use quercetin?
I was having it for a long time and I stopped.
Yes.
So many things.
I know. Here's the thing. I found quercetin in a powdered form that you can get, an organic quercetin powder. And again, when you're making an elixir or a smoothie, it's just there with your stuff and it just goes in, right? And a way to keep it simple if you want to make combination packets is like, you know, you just put a bunch of just stuff together and then dump it in. I like to just go with like the feeling of what do I really need today?
Yeah.
Right. And okay. Yeah. That quercetin's really calling to me. Or you know what? I feel like I'm getting a little puffy. I'm going to go with the higher dose of vitamin C and higher dose of quercetin. Cause the truth is we're always exposed to stuff all the time. And sometimes we're more exposed than others, right? If you have grandchildren and you go visit your grandchildren and they're like soppy noses and they're breathing on you, that may be time to go, I'm going to just take care of me a little bit better. I'm going to take some of these immune tonic things to boost my immune system. Or you're traveling and you're not eating as well as you might, but there's the stress of, you know, sleeping in strange environments and the travel, even though it's fun, there's an extra stress on your body. Yeah. And so really getting in the habit of doing some of these herbal things that you can do as part of your regime. I'm not a big fan of just giving you more pills to take. I'd rather you be making more food-based things.
Yeah, for a while I was rotating the adaptogens that I would put in the smoothies.
Yeah.
I should restart that
process. I think that's a good thing for you to be doing on a regular basis. You know, if you take 1 or 2 days off a week, big deal, right? But on a regular basis to be including those things, I think is a good idea. And the astragalus and reishi tend to be really good immune type of tonics. The vitamin C is specifically, if you are concerned about shingles being a risk, that vitamin C is very good for that. And then the quercetin is super important for that histamine type inflammation. Not so like turmeric might be better for like a joint inflammation, a heavier, thicker inflammation. But the quercetin, really good for the histamine.
Yeah. For a while, I was eating a lot of onion because it has high quercetin.
Yep.
But it appeared as something that I should minimize.
On your chest. So one of my biggest concerns with doing some of those tests is it creates food phobia.
Yeah.
Like on the one hand, we want to know if things are really bad for us. But if you're reading this stuff and, oh, this says I shouldn't eat this. And then you're like, what am I going to eat? I can't eat bananas. They say it's a superfood, but my blood sugar goes up and I, you know. So I would just relax about it, right?
Mm-hmm.
Incorporate more of your stress reduction breaks throughout your day and when you get home. And then do immune system support.
Okay.
That's going to help like your gut as well as everything. Mm-hmm. Right? Yeah.
Thank you. Okay?
Yeah, you're welcome. All right. So, Paula, let me pull up. I'm going to pull up your Dutch test. Yeah, I'm going to pull up your Dutch test. All right. So, over here. Are you okay with me sharing it?
Yep.
Mm-hmm. Okay, good. Paula, whoops, oops, I'm on the wrong screen. This one is over, done, go by. Okay, now I'll open this one up again that I was in before. And there's Sandra's test, I'll close that. Here's this. And so, lab folder. And then some of them are in the 2018. So open both.
Right.
This is your Dutch. So this is your current Dutch. We'll relook at that. And then I'm going to look at your last year's Dutch. So it was right around, it was almost exactly a year ago, as I recall. I remember being right around June 2018. Why is this? There we go. Oops, it just went away. Can you go back to your that folder? And I'll open up 2018. And Dutch test 613. Oh wait, there's a final amended. Do you recall if the final amended had everything? Or
yeah, it did.
All right. Sometimes they give you like just the amended parts and you have to look at two tests. Open it. All right. So I will share my screen. If I can find you guys again. There we go. Share. Touch test, share. All right. So I've got that up. And here your testosterone was fine, right? It was normal, which makes me think if the blood was high, that the high in the blood was bound, protein bound, because this was normal. But comparatively, it was definitely higher than everything else. And your DHEA was in the, you know, a decent quartile in the third. This was 2018. All right. So the next one is 2019. And your testosterone went off the charts, mm-hmm. right? So it's what happened between then and now. And that's what we were trying to explore.
Right.
And so it's two things. What happened to shoot it up? Because your estrogen didn't change much. Let's see. Estrone, versus last year's versus now. Actually, your estrogens are a little higher. So yeah, I think it's where is that testosterone coming from is the question we need to ask. I'm not convinced that it's really here. It's like, why isn't more of it being converted down even though it's high? But it may be a feedback that your body's saying we don't need more. But I would have expected, yeah, that's huge. I definitely think you should get the blood done, get the free and the whatever the total, the normal one is.
Now yeah, I looked up my labs from 3 years ago and that's what she checked. She checked total and free.
Okay. And what were they compared to ranges total?
The total was 37.
And the range?
5 to 32.
Okay. So slightly high. Okay. So in the free?
The free was 6.7. And the range for that was 0.6 to 3.8.
Okay. So the free was actually higher, percentage-wise higher, like 50% over the range versus this was just a little bit over the range. Okay. I would get both of those done again so we can compare. And this was in 2016?
Right.
Mm-hmm. Okay. What month?
April.
April. So 42016. If you can get those numbers put in, do you have her chart open, her notes open? If you could put those numbers in her notes, that would be helpful. I've got them.
Sure. Yeah. Sure. Paula, would you mind pinging those in the chat, the Zoom chat, and I'm going to add the exact numbers.
Yeah, that'd be great.
Okay.
Thank you.
She also checked my sex binding globulin. Is that useful or not?
Yeah. Yeah. What is it?
It was 28, which was very low. The range is 30 to 135.
Okay. So the sex hormone binding globulin, that's why if we look at the total versus free, the difference is that the total is all of it that's bound to the SHBG, and the free is what's been freed from that. So that makes sense in terms of the fact that the free is low, higher by percentage than the range because you've got low sex hormone binding globulin. I mostly see people with high sex hormone binding globulin. And I'm going to look. Insulin resistance, hypothyroid, androgen steroid use. So it's actually the high levels that can cause it. You don't use androgen steroids, but consistent. It's not a typical, you know, medical approach to low sex hormone binding globulin. Mm-hmm. Right. So just what I said, right? When your levels are low, your body has more unbound for your use. When it's high, it has less. According to this one, the normal range for females is 18 to 140. Oh, this is millimoles. This might be the international units. What was the units that they say there?
On which one?
On the sex hormone binding globulin.
It was the NMOL.
Yeah. Okay, yeah, so it's the same as this per NMOL per liter, right? /L.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, so this range is much different than what your lab is showing. It's a much wider range. So yours might be more of an ideal range versus a... I'll have to look that one up. Not very much. Women with PCOS would have low sex hormone binding globulin, insulin resistance, and excess androgen. So you don't have obesity, but
not anymore. I did then.
You did then, yeah. Yeah, I would say let's look at those again, including the sex hormone binding globulin. And again, you know, because not all your, should I get this up, resume share, how do I get that? Not all of your medical professionals are going to take the Dutch as being, you know, a valid quote-unquote test, just tell them you're concerned because it shot up so high. My concern with things that shift is not like so much what's happening now, but what is the trend. And in this case, it shot up a lot in 3 years. So I think we really need to look at what the cause is.
Mm-hmm.
And so looking at the levels in the blood so that at least we're talking apples to apples compared to what they were before, and to see if those have elevated as much, and then talking to the gynecologist or the primary and saying, I know you don't think this is an issue, but it's gone up tremendously and now it's way out of the range and I really want to get to the bottom of this. What can we do to figure it out?
Mm-hmm.
Because it's not really a functional thing at that point, right? We're looking at all the functional things and, you know, you're doing your best with reversing the insulin resistance. You've done a tremendous job with that. You've lost a tremendous amount of weight,
right?
You've been doing stress management. I mean, you're doing all kinds of things and if it's shifting, then we want to look to see, is there something else going on, right? We've ruled out exogenous testosterone. Right? We ruled that out. You can sometimes skincare products, makeup. I know you're really careful about that stuff. Like a lot of the commercial stuff will have hormone derivatives or hormone antagonists in them, but you don't use anything like that, right? You don't?
No, I mean, I'm using Dr. Kabeca's, you know, products, the progesterone and her Jolva. And then I use the Anne Marie skincare products.
Yeah. So it's not like there's going to be some weird testosterone analog that's throwing off your system here.
I don't think so. Yeah.
No. Your DHEA is, your current one, DHEA is on the low side. And so I was looking back because I know that Anna Kabeca's cream might have a little bit of DHEA in it.
It does.
So, you know, but the other thing would be looking in, is there something wrong with the pathway that goes from DHEA to testosterone? Let's see. It's even lower than it was last time. Is there something wrong with that pathway? You know, a missing cofactor. I have mine here, sitting here so I don't have to tip my head and look at it. Should be here. Here we go. So if we look at what do we require to go from DHEA, is that overactive, right? We want to look to see, is that pathway that goes from DHEA down to, let's just look at the androstenedione. Look at the chart that has them. Androstenedione. Within range. So everything's within range except the testosterone. So it's the conversion, not from DHEA to these intermediates, but more those intermediates to the testosterone, which would be androstenedione down to testosterone. That's excessive, and the one that goes down, the aromatase one, is low, going down to estrogen. And we're not even showing. They're not really showing me what I really want to see here is, what does it take? Epitestosterone is low. So it's like it's favoring the testosterone pathway over the other. So what are we missing? And it's not really showing us, darn. It's not showing the pathways. The beta. Oh, beta reductase is low, correct? Let me see. 5-beta. You're pretty balanced in your beta and alpha. Yeah, it's just really curious. Like, what cofactors convert androstenedione into testosterone, and why is that so overactive? Because it's not like the others are underactive. And if we look here, everything's within range on the androgens, except the DHEA is on the low end, and the testosterone is on the high end. But I'm not seeing on this chart what's involved. CYP19. Do we have a test? Does your genetics show CYP19?
Mm-hmm.
Do you know if there's a SNP there?
I think there's a SNP in one of those, yeah. Okay. I don't think I have any. I think it's heterozygous.
Okay. Let me go back here. We have a separate folder for genetics, or is it all in the main? Where would I find it?
Yeah, it's at the top there.
Genetics, there we go. Mm-hmm. Missing it. I'm going to look at the genetic detoxification. Seems to have most of those listed. It doesn't show it. Let me look at the one you did, the MT is a short one.
Yep.
Okay. That one. CYP. There's two C19. There's 19. It's the. Not C19. 2, 3. There's 1A1. There's one. Okay. What I'm going to look up is. ENTROSTENEDIONE 2. Okay. There's two hydrogens. The enzyme 17 beta hydroxylase. So I'm just going to assume this enzyme is overactive. Testosterone estrogen, or estrone, conversion to estrogen requires the enzyme. Oh, I saw the blood semen. See if we can make sense of it. This is where going really like going into the chemistry and looking and see if we can figure something out. This is a good paper. It has all the different ones. Trust me. So control F and see if it mentions that enzyme. Nope. Well, this looks like a paper that would take me a long time to go through right now, but let's keep that one open. Excess. Okay, this is how your body makes it, right? So it makes it by going from pregnenolone, blah, blah, into this androstenedione, into testosterone. So if there's excess, it's either being caused by you taking in excess, which you're not, doesn't look that way, some sort of another tissue in the body producing excess, or this pathway going out of balance and causing you to mostly shift towards testosterone instead of balancing it down towards the other pathways. We don't have too much. We don't have excess. Okay. I'll use upregulation. It's in Wikipedia, so we got to take it with a grain of salt. You see that?
Uh-huh.
Oh, my God.
Oh, my God.
I thought the other sheet was
Right.
This is like, that was a simplification. So here's androstenedione. Oh my. Okay, this is going to take some studying. Originates from the conversion of dehydroepi and 1,700-oxyprogesterone, right? Common precursor from pregnenolone. Okay. Catalyzed by this one. Let's see. That one. Whereas, let's see if that says anything of interest. Induction of 3-beta isomerase gene transcription. Yeah, I'm gonna have to sit with this because this is an alpha. I'm gonna save it to my save clip, health research, interesting environment. All right. Okay, I've saved it. See if anybody has a simplified Cliff Notes version. What causes it? Okay, does it increase? Oh, it's a product. You know, there's a lot of athletes that would love to have your numbers.
Right?
They take all kinds of illegal substances to try to push their testosterone up.
Uh-huh.
Okay, let's see. Sources on types of androgens in women. I hate these sites. They're just loaded with ads and you don't get to actually see what you really want to see. And you have to watch what you click on because you end up in somebody's ad.
Right.
The rest of this, forget it. That's why I just leave. I'll find a more, you know, reputable site. Here, the enzyme. We just want to know what causes it to increase. So androstenedione is converted to either testosterone or estrone. Your body's clearly preferring to take it to testosterone because, again, we're in Wikipedia. But maybe they'll have something. The reason I said I'm always cautious with Wikipedia is because people can go in and change this stuff, and we don't know who's really writing it and who's, you know.
Yeah.
Metabolism levels. Okay. Increased serum testosterone over an 8-hour period in men who take a single oral dose. Nothing there. All right. This is going to take some digging, but I would say let's get those numbers to see if it's really, if it's continuing to rise in a serum level, if it's just here, but it really seems to me that there's something either producing it topically or causing that pathway to shift towards, you can see it in the picture, but you can also see it here, right? Everything is within range. The DHEA is on the low end of range. So partially it could be that the DHEA is also converting, but the DHEA converts to androstenedione, diol, or androsterone down to eicosanoil and all this. But these are all in range except the testosterone being high.
Mm-hmm.
And the epitestosterone, let me just look that up in here because I think they have a section which talks about why the epitestosterone would be low. Androgen metabolism. Status. And you're some ear. And another person's thing, they talked all about epitestosterone. You're balanced on your 5-alpha. All right, let's just look up one more thing. I hope I'm not boring you all with geeking out on these pathways, but I'd love to get an answer. You know, at least something we can head in a direction of evaluating. Other than what we've already talked about. So we're going to look at epi, because that one is low. Epitestosterone. Acts as an anti-androgen. Are you taking steroids? Are you doing that as used as a ratio in urine? Let's just see what this means. A 7-year-old woman presented with a secondary elevated levels of testosterone and dihydro and decreased sex hormone binding. So that sounds like you. Almost daily use of a testosterone-containing ointment. The vulva is disclosed at the use of. You're not doing that. I'm going to just go back to what we talked about already because we want to find out if there's something producing this. I can't find anything related to the pathways, what causes the pathways to get increased there. So get your testosterone, pre-testosterone, and SHBT. We'll compare them to a few years ago, and then I'll help you create an argument for your whatever doctors if they're skeptical about like really not just ignoring this, like just find out like what's causing this. Cause it's like what is this? And is there something weird? You don't want to have that playing in your mind, like rule something out, like just, okay. But to ignore it and say, well, let's wait till it gets worse is just, it's not a good idea. I don't think.
Right.
Okay.
Okay.
Cause we did go through step-by-step aromatase, and it was like, it didn't look like you were doing anything that would have massively increased aromatase like that or decreased aromatase like that.
Well, we wondered about the nettles.
Yeah, we did. But, you know, when I look at people, I'm just thinking, you know, clinically, right? If I have people who do have aromatase excess and I want them to decrease it, it's not like taking the amount of nettles that you're doing just like completely shuts down, you know what I mean? It's not that potent an inhibitor, right? I mean, it's certainly something we could experiment with and take it away and then redo for sure. Because that was the only thing out of all of those factors that you had actually increased over the period of time from one to the next. But
is quercetin also an aromatase inhibitor? I was looking that up yesterday and I was finding.
Might be.
I think I was.
I think it's a weak aromatase inhibitor.
Okay.
think they had a list in this article because I've looked at this article before. Mangosteen, Garcinia. That's not even showing quercetin in here. Let's see what they're, why they're measuring it, why it even shows up if it's not. They just want to get you to the site and sell me supplements because it's not saying that it's a neuroactive. It doesn't say anything about it being a aromatase inhibitor. Those are pharmaceuticals. If it is, it's a mild one.
Okay.
I don't think it would not cause, it would cause that big a shift. Quercetin is one of the most abundant flavonoids found in inhibit aromatase in placental microsomes. Dione, to E1. Okay, so it enzyme is increased by alcohol age, gonadotrophins. Shown to reduce estrogen production. Again, it doesn't show in, did I spell it wrong? Q-U-E-R-C-E-T-I-N?
Q-U-E-R-C-E-T-I-N, right.
Yeah. I would say it's not showing up as one of the most potent ones, for
okay.
sure.
Okay.
So I don't think that the amounts that you're taking would significantly impact that pathway. Okay? So are you going to be able to get with your primary and ask them, or your gynecologist?
Well, I can't see her. I know that. Probably wouldn't be able to see her for like 3 months, but I send messages via an online portal.
Good.
And I will ask for her to order these labs, and hopefully she will do it without saying, well, I need to see you.
Well, I don't want to wait 3 months. Just listen.
No, I can't. She's already disappointed me with this GI effects thing, so...
This should be easy because I can see where the GI effects means she would have to get with somebody on her team to go there and create a whole account with them. And it's not, it's out of her realm. Whereas yeah, her blood
well, the thing of it is the end of May, she said she would do it. That's the thing. When I was actually there in front of her, she said she would do,
she would do it. But then the nurse practitioner left after that.
Well, she knew she was leaving. She told me that day. Yeah.
All right. That's out of integrity, I guess. So, you know.
Yeah. Yeah.
So, see what you can get done. The GYN, the gynecologist should be able to run it.
I'm doubtful that she would because she doesn't see this as a problem. So, I think she would probably refuse me.
Yeah. And I don't want to look at it as a problem. I just want to look at it as a piece of information that says there may be an imbalance here. If there is, we want to catch it before the imbalance gets worse. We want to identify it, and then we want to do something about it, right? Mm-hmm. Early signs is, you know, it's kind of like out of the realm of Western medicine to look for early signs, right? They just wait until disease.
Right.
And, you know, I think being strong with them and saying, look, this is out of balance. It's clearly out of balance. I just want to test on the blood to show me if it's, it was high before, if it's moving in the direction of getting worse, then I want to be able to look at what does this imply? Is it something that I need to be concerned about for my health or not? Mm-hmm. And I think it's just more people have to be pain in the ass patients, quite frankly. You know what I mean? Like, yeah. No, I'm not accepting that. This is my body. And another question to always ask is, what if it was your daughter that presented this way? Would you want to figure out why she had such high testosterone? Mm-hmm. Right? What if it was your mother? You know, depending on the age of the, what if it was your mother? Would you just want to let it go? Or would you want to out of curiosity know and make sure that there was nothing wrong there? So I think you got to be a pain in the ass patient with her, with either of them, and just insist, yeah, this is what I want.
Okay.
Right, because when we started talking about all three of those tests, if it was just the total testosterone, it's probably under $50. But with the three of them, we're looking at more like $350.
Yeah.
You know, and to pay out of pocket, it's like, why have pay out of pocket when you have insurance that could cover it?
Exactly,
yeah. Yeah, right, and you're on Medicare?
Medicare Advantage.
Supplement. Yeah. Yeah, so that should cover it with a small copay.
Right.
And we should be getting the kind of care that you pay for, right? Do you want to pay for me to end up with something bad that requires, you know, surgery or intervention, and then it's going to cost the insurance company a fortune? Or you want to pay $350 to get me tested and rule out whether there's a problem here and if there's other testing that's required? Mm-hmm. Just an ectopic, because it's rising.
Yeah.
Without any reason. You're a healthy person who doesn't do the standard American crap that's loaded with hormone analogs, right? There's right. No sign that we could see of any exogenous outside of you coming in.
Right.
So if there's not, if it's just some imbalance in this aromatase pathway and you're super sensitive to quercetin and nettles, you know, so be it. Let's lower those doses or get rid of those things. But the quercetin is helping you with other things. Right. So it's a matter of, is that high testosterone really going to hurt me? And probably not. Right? Probably not. But it doesn't seem to be, except for a little facial hair. So you're always weighing out
right.
What's the danger of that versus that. But knowing, there's no tumor. Great. I'm good. Right? Mm-hmm. Peace of mind.
Exactly. Yeah.
Right? Yeah. Yeah.
Okay.
Okay. Mm-hmm. Anything else I can support you guys with? Oops.
I have a quick question. Oh, go ahead.
No, go ahead, Sandra.
No, you go.
Okay. I was listening to a doctor on a YouTube video yesterday talk about supplementing with iodine, and he was in favor of supplementing with iodine, and he likes the drops, you know, like what I'm taking, but he was talking about that supplementing with a kelp tablet gives you more of the different types of iodine.
I'm all for that. It's usually not higher doses, but go ahead, continue.
Yeah. Well, he just said that the liquid has just the one type, you know.
Well, it's two usually, right? It's the two. Yeah, it's two.
Yeah. Okay.
But the kelp will also have iodine. It'll also have T1 and T2 preformed in there. And I talked about that on one of my calls a couple of weeks ago. But that's the T3 and T4 are the main thyroid hormones. But precursors to them that are building blocks to them are T1 and T2. T1 would have tyrosine with one iodine, T2 is tyrosine with two iodines, and that's certain strains of kelp, in particular Laminaria digitata, have that in there. Now, tablet-wise versus just powder-wise, that's what I would be considering, right, is looking at just getting the powdered kelp. Like, that's what I do. And
I'm not real
crazy about the flavor.
Yeah,
and then a tablet would be fine, you know. I usually go with the iodine supplement itself versus the kelp, because when somebody shows a deficiency based on the test, because it's predictable, I know how much they're getting. Whereas kelp can vary from, you really can't tell exactly how much you're getting. And so I'll use it therapeutically in that form, but I'm totally fine with help supplementation if he had a good, you know, a good recommendation for the dosing and all that.
No, I didn't. No.
Yeah. You know, what are you taking now? You're taking about 12.5 or
20? 10. I do 10 drops, which is 10 milligrams.
Okay. Yeah, that's easy to get. So you could do, let's see, we could find a, you want to be careful when you're getting kelp tablets that they don't have the fillers and the binders and all. And there are some. Puritan's Pride, Nature's Way. Just look to see what they have. There's here Pure Naturals Norwegian. And also the source, right? Where is it coming from? Do not buy it from China. Here's a Norwegian, right? It's probably some really high, pristine waters, very high up close to the pole. Let's see what this has. Excellent source of iodine, rich natural source of vitamin minerals, probably to aid in weight management. Full of benefits. May support you. Let's see what's in the product itself. So I like to avoid the ones with stearic acid. So it's finding a kelp tablet that can be, you know, that's pure, that's really going to get. Here's a now. Sometimes the now stuff is okay. Non-GMO. I don't know what a K means. Vegan. Capsule size. So it's a capsule, so it's more likely to be. Super greens, 325 micrograms of iodine per capsule. So it means, you know, it really does mean taking a lot.
Yeah, right.
Right?
Yeah.
15 of them, more, 30 of them. Another option that you do have is that you get the kelp powder. You can get it very inexpensively, like $15 for a pound at Maine Coast Sea Vegetables. Mm-hmm. And then you can get your little cap them quick in capsules. Mm. And then you can fill your own capsules. And then you know there's no other garbage in the capsules. And there's just, theirs are just cellulose capsules. You can do that. It doesn't take all that long. I mean, I capped up when I was doing clove capsules. And, you know, I did like 100 of them in, you know, an hour or less. So, but it's a matter of how much, you know, it's calculating how much iodine is in each teaspoon or tablespoon or whatever. I'm not sure how much you can fit in there. But you do have to be, I mean, you could get a lot of kelp in a teaspoon of kelp powder. Let me just see. Maine Coast. I like the Laminaria digitata just because it's been found to, here we go, pick your gift. Market. I go to their site directly, although they close down for a month in the summer usually. So it's like a family run business. There's this test. And that's what I like about it. They test everything. Am I still sharing? Yeah, they test everything. So how they test, disclaimer. Here we go. Table, radioactivity. So that's their testing. Trace minerals, let's see. Okay, let's see what the, yeah, there it is. Closed. Say they closed down in July. July to September. Holy cow. If you're going to order from them, get it done quickly. They do that every year. Let's go to kelp. Huh. They have seaweed support capsules. Interesting. All the benefits of seaweed in cow. New formula, blend of certified organic, raw, and our new veggie caps are made solely from fermented tapioca. Here, a new iodine formula contains the same four ingredients in a ratio, so it's still, again, the same, about 300 micrograms. But you might not need as much. If you want to look into it, so just go to seaveg.com, SEAVEG.com, and see what they have to say and see if we can find in their powder kelp blends. Here we go. Here we go. iodine content 9,000 to 15. So this is about where you'd want to be, right? That's 10 and a half. That's milligrams in a 3-gram serving, available in powder only. And I wonder how you can hide it. So this is a possibility as well.
Well, does it get in to the cells better though in that liquid? You know, I put the liquid drops in a little bit of water on an empty stomach. So is that getting into my system better than a powder that I'm putting into food somewhere?
Yeah, I mean, the thing about it is it's because it's ionized. And the thing about iodine, it is one of those minerals that needs a really solid, good stomach acid to be absorbed. So, you know, maybe you want to take some of it as the liquid and then just add some of the powder where you can to get that wide variety.
Mm-hmm.
Right. And that's the other reason why oftentimes we'll have people who have iodine deficiencies to actually do it, especially if I think they have low stomach acid, to do it in the capsules, but also be doing, I mean, to do it in the liquid, but also be doing the capsules. Yeah, because that's going to just get right in versus, you know, like in food or in capsules where it's in the actual food form is going to be slower and more dependent on your stomach acid.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
So, you know, I always recommend getting the variety too. So, you know, I use sea vegetables all the time. I even put kelp in my chocolate treats, you know, I just kind of sprinkle a little kelp and nettles and dulse and things like that. And I just sprinkle it into pretty much everything I make
mm-hmm.
to make sure that I get it.
Yeah. Yeah. I have dulse powder. That's not quite as strong as the kelp.
It's not quite as high in iodine either.
Right. Yeah.
Yeah.
Okay. Yeah. All right. Thank you.
Yeah. Play around with it and see what you can come up with. You might be able to make a really cool, you know, soup or stew or something that's strong in other flavors that would overpower it.
It's the smell of it too. That, yeah, it gets me.
You not like seafood, like fish and
stuff? I do. Ooh, but there's something about that. Yeah. There's something about that kelp. That's just, I don't know.
Well, you know, sometimes it's like, pay attention to that. And it could be your body rejecting it because there's, I don't know, it's just not right at this point.
Yeah, because I'm not a person who has that kind of a negative reaction.
Especially if you like, some people just hate anything related to the sea. So they won't eat fish or anything. They hate that fishy smell. So that's why they don't like the sea vegetables. But dulse doesn't bother you.
No, not as much, uh-uh.
Trust it.
Okay.
Yeah. Okay. Yeah, and disguising it in a capsule when your body's having that adverse response to it may not be the best thing.
Right.
Could be that first line of defense saying, yeah, this isn't good for us now. Yeah. Yeah. Good. Good discussion. Sandra, you had one more thing or a couple more things.
Yeah, remember when we did the nutrigenomics retreat? You showed the interpretation chart that you had for the practitioners. Where can I find that in the website?
I think we put them up on, let me find it. I'm pretty sure we put them up right after that on the nutrigenomics page. At least I'd put in that request. Okay, so I'm going to go to... here and go down here, nutrigenomics. Here we go. Pretty sure we put those links to those on this page shortly after. It would have been on the interpreting page. Oh, a whole section on interpretation charts. That's what I did. Interpretation charts. Here you go. Can you see that?
Yes.
Link. Yep, so it's a whole page of them.
Oh, so you have to open each of it.
Well, they're all separate. Yeah, we didn't put them all together. We put them separate by function. So you just say, oh, I want to look at the cardiovascular ones or I want to look at the vitamin mineral ones.
Okay.
I mean, I suppose we could try putting them all together at some point and having here download them all. but we don't.
Because I think the thing you showed, it had it all together, didn't it?
No, I'm no? just going to open one for you. Mental health, okay? Let's just open mental health. It's the SNPs for all the SNPs related to that. So this one has three.
Okay.
And then it gives you the stuff across the top. I mean, it's certainly something we could look into doing if we
put
them all together and have it on the page. All the SNPs, I mean, it's probably not a bad idea to have it if somebody wants to download it.
I had a memory that everything was in one chart, but maybe
yeah.
it was in memory.
Would you do me a favor and make a note of that to ask Jazzy if she could take all the PDFs that are on this page. Let me give you the link to this page. I'll put it in the chat. All the links that are on this page to just make a, you know, download all of them at once, and she could just combine it as one PDF. I think that's pretty easy to do, to combine documents into a PDF, right? It's pretty straightforward. Here we go. There you go.
Question number two.
Yes.
What do you think about using camelina oil instead of flax oil? Because supposedly it's more heat stable and more stable in
camelina
general.
Camelina oil?
Yeah.
Never heard of it.
You never heard of it?
Is it an omega-3 rich?
Yeah.
I never heard of it. Camelina?
Camelina. C-A-M-E-L-I-N-A.
C-A-M-E-L-I-N-A.
Okay. It's called false flax.
I've never heard of it. Can you buy it as seeds?
Yes, you can buy it in seeds to spread in on salads or whatever. You can also have it cold pressed, buy it cold pressed, and use it as you know as you would use flax oil.
So you can
it's
actually
high in vitamin E and
yeah, it looks like it has a higher cooking point.
Yeah, and it has more resistance against getting rancid.
Yeah, flax is very, very delicate. I want to see how much 3 versus 6 it is. Okay, omega 3, 6, 9 unsaturated. Okay, so flax has a higher percentage. Flax, they don't show chia, but flax has a higher percentage, but it's higher than hemp, certainly higher than olive and coconut and all the others, but 36% versus flax is probably like 56 or 70% or something like that. I haven't done much research on it. It sounds like it. I'd like to see what the temperatures are. Oh, here we go. And flax is like 118. And it's more than the heat, like there's a smoke point, but then there's the point at which the oil and the fats become unstable and oxidized. And that's what I would want to look into. So a high smoke point, you know, that doesn't mean as much as to say, like any time you heat an oil, you're going to get some oxidation, right? So, and they don't list flax as having a smoke point because flax, at, you know, anything 118 or above, really starts to oxidize fats, most of them. But, I mean, it's certainly worth more research.
Yeah, it's kind of the you see it in certain farmers markets across the country.
Yeah.
They are, you know, it's like becoming the thing or the one of those new things. All new things, whatever.
Seed, right? Camelina seed.
I mean, it sounds interesting.
Yeah, I'm always skeptical when things first come out. Like these, I wouldn't get it in these clear. I would get it in the dark bottle like we saw on that other site. I wouldn't get it. Camelina seeds. utilized alternative grain crop. I wonder if... see, it's a member of the mustard family. Just to grow them. Let's see, edible seeds. Let's see. Camelina sativa. It's part of the brassica family. Referred to as wild flax or false flax. Just seeing the oil. The seeds of Camelina sativa. I wonder why I'm not seeing much in the way of the seeds themselves. I'd be curious what it tastes like.
I tried the oil.
Yeah.
And it was okay.
Okay, so pretty mild. It didn't have a strong... Like hemp oil is really... I think it's nasty. Because I love hemp seeds.
Uh-huh.
Oh, wait, here. Edible seeds of muskmelon, camelina meal, or wild flax. Let's see. That's interesting. Doesn't say it's organic, though. Yeah, I mean, I don't know enough about it to know. At first glance, it looks like it could be reasonable. I'd make sure that you got it in a dark glass bottle to make sure that it is protected from light and air. And I'd like to see more about the, are the omega-3s really preserved in there when you heat it?
Yeah.
Because I'm always skeptical about any of the omega-3 or any of the omega-3 or 6s, right? They're all very sensitive, like almonds, you know, almond flour. Yeah, it's heated, right? And it damages the fat. So it may have a higher smoke point, but how much damage is actually happening at what point would be damage happening to it? Eating it raw sounds fine, you know, throw it on salads.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. Okay. But yeah, worth looking into.
Yeah. Yeah, it sounded great, you know.
Yeah.
Lots of vitamin E.
Yeah, I ordered something called algae oil, thinking that it was going to be algae oil, a good alternative with that, and it turns out it doesn't have any omega-3s in it. They were touting it as being an alternative to olive oil because it had more omega-9s. I can't remember the exact thing, and it was on one of the practitioner sites. I'm like, oh, give it a try. Algae oil, yay. You know, maybe get some PHA from it.
That's right.
So I don't know how they do that. Yeah.
And the last thing is you suggested transformation digest enzymes, which I'm using. But, you know, since I'm taking so many, it's kind of expensive. Is there, if you feel that that's the thing I should get, I'll spend the money, but there might be others. I mean,
yeah. So the thing about them is what I've found is that they're more potent than the others. So when you look at these are cheaper, you have to look at the protein digesting units, the carbohydrate digesting units. And it's actually, when I looked at it years ago, it was actually cheaper on a per unit basis to buy them. And I will tell you that the changes I saw in people switching from like Premier Research, which is a good company, enzymes to them, like night and day. This woman went out and bought a case of them just to make sure she never lost them because the differences were so profound.
Wow. Yeah, because I didn't notice a difference between the other ones I was taking.
Yeah.
So that's...
Yeah. That's all I can say. You know, you have to make... decision if it fits your budget and whatnot, but I would look at the units.
Yeah. If you trust it, you know.
Yeah, I trust it.
This money will spend then.
Yeah, it's your health, right?
Yeah.
Which one are you using, Sandra? Because I looked at those and I couldn't quite, I wasn't sure which one to get, and I got one. I don't know.
There are two. There's a, well, maybe there are more. There's a Digest. There's the one where I'm taking, and there's the Digest Zyme that is cheaper.
And it's lower potency. Yeah, so the Digest Zyme is more their over-the-counter consumer brand, whereas the Digest is usually their practitioner brand, practitioner line. And the Digest Zyme is lower potency, from what I understand. Similar like ratios of the three. Mm-hmm. Yeah, but lower potency.
Well, the one that I got says carbo something on it. It's supposed to have even more.
More, yep. Yep, that's fine. Because like somebody who has trouble with fats, I would recommend their lipo. I don't know if it's called Lipozyme or whatever, but they have different ones. The Digest is kind of a balanced, kind of a neutral, just take it in general. But people have trouble with fat, or if you're eating, you know, mostly not fat meals, but on fat meals, we take the one with the higher lipo, and the carb one would have more of the amylase in it to digest the starches. So I'm not sure if that one, because you don't eat much in the way of carb, if that's...
Well, I think there's some other enzymes in it that are supposed to help more with the fibery kinds of things, like from broccoli and... You know, those sorts of things, yeah.
Right, more cellulose right. And things like that that can break down and make it easier to digest the really high fibrous foods. Yeah, so, you know, as with anything, right, you experiment and see if there's a difference between them, right? Or if you're having a high-fat meal, you take the one that has more of the lipase in it. Or you get the balance with the Digest, and then you can just get a lipase to go with it, or an amylase to go with it, amylase-cellulase combination.
Well, for me, I added the oxybile. I think it's to help digest the fats.
Yes.
So.
Yeah.
So I could just take one enzyme that has both?
Well, no. If you're going to do the bile, I would keep it separately, because a lot of people get, if you take too much of it, you can have a reaction. So if you have it separate, you can control the amounts. You're not stuck with the amount that's in the combo.
Okay.
Yeah.
Yeah, makes sense.
I mean, if you get to a point where it's like, oh, this is how much works, and it works on a consistent basis for me, then you can find a combination. Like, I think that Biotics has one, and Designs for Health have one. They have combination formulas that have the bile in it.
Okay.
Right, for folks that have trouble with the fat.
Well, maybe it's time for you to enjoy Sunday. Now,
be nice.
I have one last question.
Yeah.
In the Friday newsletter, you said something about more information coming about signing up for ERC again, and there hasn't been anything more over the weekend. So
no, because I've been slammed, and it's on my agenda for as soon as we get off. That's what I'm working on. I've got the pricing all laid out, and I'm looking at, you know, what are we including? So yeah, I promise you I'll get it out tomorrow. We are committed to getting out tomorrow. There's just been a lot of stuff going on, and I've been trying to get to bed before 2 a.m. every day. So yeah, so that's what that's on the agenda.
In that newsletter, it says to set an appointment with Lynn.
Yeah, if you want to come back, you're not sure about coming back.
Oh,
you're not sure.
Okay.
Right, you're not sure whether what level to come back at. You can set up a time and talk to Lynn, and she'll help guide you.
I didn't think I needed that, but.
Yeah, so don't, you know, she's busy too. So if you don't need it, you're just going to, I'll get it together, I promise you. I will get it out to the end of today. I'm trying really hard to get that out. I apologize for it being so long, but we had transitions and new team coming in and other people leaving, and just not having the extra hands to help me get it all together and for me to just get my sit down. So I've got it in my head now, and now it's just a matter of laying it out. I like to every year improve the program based on what feedback I'm getting from people, and add things and take away things and see, well, those things flopped. We didn't need that. Let's add this instead. And I definitely am going to add some extra training type stuff on more advanced topics like sleep, and then bringing people in who have some of that. I definitely want to bring in Jim Otis about sleep, because he's like phenomenal with that. And he has that process of brain time and all that. You know, I just want to bring in some other people and have some special stuff for the elite, the returning people that is not in the regular program, because it gets overwhelming for people in their first year. So kind of an advanced track kind of thing. Yeah.
Well, one of the reasons I wanted to ask was because I have listened to the Sweet Spot call. I listened to the replay of that. And you were talking about ERC and that, and making an offer in that for people to sign up with a deposit, you know, and
yes,
something by the weekend was going to end. And I thought, well, you know, does that apply to us too? You know, so it was like,
you'll get, and that there's going to get extended for them too, because I never got to write to them again and really summarize it. We'd made that, and again, what they had access to was the same sign up invitation as it was from last year.
Right.
And I want to edit it. I told them, you know, I'm still editing it and I'm still working on it. So yeah, we're a little behind schedule on it, but we will. I have it all laid out, and Scott actually made me all the little forms. So all I have to do, and I set up a page that all you have to do is go choose your level, click it, put your deposit down, and reserve your spot. And there will be early sign-up bonuses. And I'm trying to put together a lab package or optional kind of, okay, if you've already had this, maybe you want this as a bonus instead of, you know, I'm just trying to think about it so that it's flexible, adding in some extra stuff that maybe with some of our practitioners who have like the special technique in this area or that area. So I've got it kind of mapped out in my head, but I have to map it out on paper and then get it out to you guys. Mm-hmm. I didn't want to send you something that wasn't up to date. Anyway, we do have the pricing. If you want, I can give you the link to that. You can just sign up and trust that it's going to be great. And, you know, we're going to be adding stuff to it and taking out things that didn't work or weren't needed. But I do have that sheet if you want. I can give you that. It's just a little page that shows you the different levels. And I am adding back, I don't know if anybody's going to sign up to it, but people had asked me, how do I work with you more directly? And I had years ago, I had a program that I called it Diamond Level. And it was like, you know, you get to meet with me every week if you want. You have my cell phone number. You know, it's like really intensive. But I'm only going to take two people in that. I may not take any. I may not get any, because it's a pretty high price tag. But there's some people out there that don't care, and they want that and they need that. I just don't have the time to take on more than two people in that kind of a intensity. But I do miss it. You know, I miss those, having somebody that I'm meeting with every week, and we're seeing the progress and we're making changes and shifts. So that's the only other change. But that's I'll give you the sheet. And that with that one, I'm saying sign up for Gold Plus, and if you want to talk to me about it, you'll just, you know, we'll talk and see if it's a good fit to go to the next level of that. So.
Right.
Yeah, and not to worry, Paula, you guys will get first dibs as our.
Oh yeah. You guys
client.
Always get first
dibs. Not to worry.
Cause yeah. You know, again, I said I was only going to take 5 at Gold Plus last year. And for the end of that thing, it was set. I'm like, we can't turn people away. They already gave us a deposit. So we closed it immediately at the end of that. But that's happened almost every year that we started out. I'm only taking 5. That's all I have time for. And then we end up with 7. So it's okay. I love you guys. I love working with you guys. I love seeing, you know, I love your enthusiasm and how much you like to dig in. And I may be a little too intense for some people who don't want to get into that intensity of understanding how their body works. But I think it's so important that we do take charge of our own health, and that's the biggest thing. And you guys are both prime examples of people who do that. It's like, this is my body. I'm going to do what it takes. I want to understand it. I want to do what's right. And no, none of us is perfect, but we're really into that. And that's what I'm trying to, you know, facilitate. And we're only going to take, you know, again, 40 people, maybe at the most 50, if we get a couple of extra coaches, and that's it, to keep it really small and really intimate so that I can really get to know everybody in the program. I don't remember everything about your labs from one call to the next. I have to always look it up. I try really hard, but it's
well,
just,
you don't remember either.
You know, yeah, it's because there's so much, right?
Yeah.
And then always, you know, new things evolve where you start to think of things in a different way, or you see things in a different light. you know, or with a new test that goes, huh, well, what does that mean compared to what that one means? And, but I think it's always this puzzle. And I think that's what we need to, that's what medicine needs to be doing instead of these rote things like, okay, here's your prescription. Oh, don't worry about it. Wait until it gets really bad. Then we'll take care of it because we have a drug for that. No, we don't want to wait for it to be really bad. We want to deal with subtle imbalances before they become disease. And that's what we're all about. And I was very excited about your calcium test when you told me about your calcium test coming back. Way to go. I mean, that's like such a relief, right? Like,
Yeah.
Cool. All right. Well, I promise you I'll make sure I get it. And I may just send it to you if, you know, before I get it officially done in Infusionsoft, so it's sent out to everybody, I'll just send you a link and say, here's what we have so far. And you know, that page, we're trying to set it up so it's easy. Like before it was like, go to the email and you click on this link if you want this and that link. So we set up a page. So we're really far along with it. Set up a page. On it, it'll have the thing that describes the program. And then there's there'll be a link to the pricing options or whatever. And then the individual sign up here, here, or here for the individual components. So we're excited. A lot of people are asking, I know. Trying my best here. Okay. Well, thank you for understanding.
Yeah, thank you.
And for a great, you know, nice intimate conversation today. It was awesome.
Yeah, it was a really nice trip.
Yeah, really good. Yeah.
The two girls from the Midwest here.
There you go. Right. Two nutrition nerd geeks from the Midwest is what I like to call you. It's like you just want to, you know, really know it and dig in instead of just tell me what to do. That's the reason I don't like the biome as much. Is like, it's just like, just tell me what to do. Like, I can't just tell, I don't want to just tell you what to do based on a test. I want to understand why the rationale is. And that, like Dutch will say, well, if this or that, but it's pulling the different pieces together and making more of a clinical judgment about what fits for you, knowing how I know you. Like, do not eat bananas as your superfood, right? Yeah. Like, come on, it's gonna, you know, if you eat blueberries and it causes your sugar to go up, don't eat bananas. You know what I mean? So we have to take it with a grain of salt. And that's why.
Yeah. I just thought, I guess, in the empirical part of it, that you can see exactly a snapshot of what's in your gut.
Oh, that's, yeah, it's great. But then I say, what am I going to do with that?
Right.
But if I see this list 14 pages long of all the stuff in my gut, it's like, what's clinically relevant, what's not? Everybody's gut's going to be a little bit different. But the things that are most important there is that you don't have enough biodiversity.
Mm-hmm.
Right? That you had good, you didn't have much in the way of inflammatory markers. You were, you know, kind of the middle of the way. Those kind of things are important. I can get those from doctor's data because it shows me the exact inflammatory markers. And I know that, you know, I know how your short chain fatty acids are when I look at a doctor's data. I know, do you need to have more short chain fatty acids? Is Bifido going to feed it? You know, and with the oat test, we know, are oxalates an issue? Right. And do we need to try to manipulate your microbiome to help you manage oxalates better? So and maybe it's just because I know those tests and I've been doing them for a really, really long time. And this is new, but every time I try really hard to go, it's like, what does this mean? What are these things? They don't tell you the amount or the ratios between them.
Yeah, I think it's a work in progress.
It is. I think it is. And I think it's early and it's great that you got it and it's a good curiosity. And what I'd like to see is, from my perspective, if people do it and follow their directions, are you seeing results? Are you seeing improvement? Are you seeing subjective, how you're feeling, but also objective? How's the test look? And if that's going in the right direction, then I kind of let to get let go of my need to control and say, okay, I'm going to trust that's valid. But if I don't have that experience with trusting that it's valid, anyway, just my opinion slipping in. Yeah. And then when Paula had to wait like 6 months to get hers back, I was like, oh my. I bought the test. I bought the kit and it's been sitting on my table. I'm like, I want to wait till they have their act together more before I do it. Right. I'm going to spend time pooping in a cup. I want to make sure I get good results from it. Not even good results in terms of that my gut is good, but I mean, in terms of that, it's, you know,
more explanation
together, that it's valid. Yeah. Yeah.
Yeah. I have one more question. One more question for Paula about that lab we were talking about in the beginning of the call. We said she was going to retake an oat, and there was one more. It was like a stool analysis, I believe.
Right.
What's that lab that you recommend?
No, it's GI effects that she's going to do. Yeah.
All right.
Yeah.
Good. All right.
She did the Genova GI. Oh, she did GI effects before, and you're going to do GI mapping.
Yeah, GI map is from Diet Solutions.
All right, so we're going to take oat and GI mapping. All right.
Yes. Yeah, oat and GI map.
All righty.
Okay, and then she's also going to do the testosterone.
Pre-testosterone,
total testosterone, and sex hormone by endoglobulin.
Correct.
Okay. Cool. Thank you, guys. Have a great rest of the day. Is it nice and sunny summertime up there now? Yeah?
It is beautiful.
Oh, humid.
Yeah,
humid. Humid, but what the
it's
heck?
It's sunny.
It's sunny? Nice.
Yeah.
Yeah, good. Yeah. My son just went away. I don't know about you. Angelica doesn't live too far from me, but the sun just went away.
I'm going to the creek. I'm going to Barton Creek. That's my plan.
Yay, go for it. I hope there's water. Well, there should be water in it because we had a wet.
Oh, yeah. Oh, yeah, there's water.
My pool... The other day when we were in the middle of the Maria call, I don't know if you guys were on the Maria call when she was showing the exercise stuff, and all of a sudden it just started storming so bad and thunder and lightning. I just had to warn people. I said, I may disappear if my internet or my electricity goes down and I'm watching it. Well, it turned out, you know, Scott went out to see, sometimes the pool overflows, you know, it gets backed up and it overflows when there's a lot of rain. He goes out there and the pool is halfway down. And he's like, because that and the filter had cracked in half and water was like splashing out of it. I'm like, did lightning hit it? Like, it was right after the storm. So we were like scratching our heads, like, what the heck? It's like cracked, literally cracked in half.
Wow.
And the pool was halfway down. He had to fill it up to make sure that, you know, the mechanisms didn't go. Yeah. Crazy stuff, right? Just all and that Mercury retrograde stuff. I never used to believe in that. I was always, what is that stuff? Mercury. What do the planets have to do with anything? But it's just coincidentally, if not, it's like amazing technology stuff. That's weird. That has happened since Wednesday or whatever it was, or this week sometime.
What is it? Mercury retrograde?
Yeah. It's something about the alignment of the planets, and whenever that happens, we get a lot of technology in it.
Yeah.
You know, it got so one time, you know, and people kept saying that, and Scott comes and goes, is Mercury in retrograde again? He's like such a skeptic. And I went, what? I don't know. Everybody always says that, and all this technology is breaking. I'm going to blame it on it's Mercury. It's funny. But anyway, it just seemed like... crazy stuff like our internet. I don't know if any of you was on the call I did on Wednesday on fasting.
I went for a little part of it.
We ended up having to do it with me talking into my cell phone, talking to Amy on the other end on her cell phone. She was logged in as me, moving my slides along and holding her cell phone up to her microphone. That's how we did that call. And then people started complaining that they didn't hear very well. Anyway,
the one yesterday went really well.
Went really well. Yes. Oh God. I was like so nervous. I really was nervous at the beginning going, I don't want to have to do this a third time just because it went well. I thought it went really well. I liked it. I'm going to edit a little bit to get some.
I was on that one.
You did see it.
Yeah.
It was fun to do to really expose the, you know, fasting and intermittent fasting as not magic for everybody, but how do you adapt it to you as an individual?
Right.
Yeah. Cool. All right, guys.
Okay. All right. Thank you very much.
Have a good Sunday. Bye-bye.
Bye, everybody.
Thank you, everybody.
Bye, everyone.
Bye-bye.